Shortly past 1:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website for the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news, where I am reliably informed all of the post-practice audio is now available, is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend from the Buffalo News. Mike Harrington, how are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Always good to see you. And I'm glad we're talking hockey. We dealt with all this year.
Absolutely, Mike. You know, you look at the Sabres, and the Jets are going to make their first trip to Buffalo on Tuesday night. The Jets and the Sabres will take to action. Sabres are 6-8-1 through 15 games this season, 13 points, currently out of a playoff spot in 11th place, actually tied with, or just 2 points ahead of the Jets right now. You know, how much longer is the Sabres organization going to accept the struggles we've seen over the last, you know, year, year and a half now, before a significant change is made to the team?
It's the $6 million question. It really is. You know, it's hard to believe, you know, they've gone this long with Lindy Ruff and Darcy Regier, and imagine what the thoughts in the building were last night when they got to the second intermission with Boston down 2-1 and were just completely outplayed. And potentially could have been 30th in the NHL at the end of the night. They came back and won that game. But ultimately, we need to see more consistency from this team. We need to see a run of games here. They've tended to pull it out at the end of seasons recently, but I think the pressure on Lindy Ruff is as high as it's ever been his time right now. Certainly, Darcy Regier got an extension before the season started, the day before the opener. They announced it. Ted Black, the president, told us yesterday that that's not an extension in perpetuity, but you know, why did you extend him at all, given their lack of success? Let's not forget here, guys. They have not won a playoff series since 2007. That would not be tolerated in virtually any other city.
Mike, Derek Roy was obviously a Buffalo Sabre for a long time, and they traded him this year to the Dallas Stars in exchange for Steve Ott. How has Steve Ott's presence on this team affected the team?
He does change the dynamic some. He's a much more physical player than Roy, but they wanted to be a little tougher to play against. And Ott is leading the NHL in hits. As a matter of fact, last night he had 11 hits, and that's the first time any Sabre hit double figures in that category since Paul Gostad did it in the Winter Classic here in 2008.
Wow.
I would have liked to have seen a little more offense from Ott, but I think he's played his role pretty well. He's a kind of player they have not had before, really, up front, or a real gnat kind of guy who can drive opponents crazy. They have that in Patrick Kaleta, but Kaleta hasn't stayed healthy enough and really doesn't play much more than a fourth-line role a lot of the time. Ott really needs to help them out in faceoffs where they've been lagging. He's done a pretty good job of that in recent games. But I like the acquisition so far. I certainly like his contribution in the locker room. He's already a pretty good voice in there. And I sense his frustration with the way this team is playing, and everyone certainly involved expects them to be better. I would think Ott will continue to take more of a leadership role in that locker room.
Mike, Tyler Myers obviously has been much talked about around the National Hockey League, and I've been caught Sabres playing a couple times this year, you know, one game specifically without him. The defense is certainly lacking without his presence, yet he's being, you know, he's been a healthy scratch because he can't crack that defense. What is the key to him turning it all around? And I guess part B to that question is he the key to the Sabres turning it around?
I really think so. I think they've struggled as Myers has struggled. Now, he sat out two games last week in a healthy scratch, came back Tuesday in Ottawa, played again last night against Boston, clearly his best performance of the year last night, had 2 points, you know, was in on the rush, scored the tying goal, was a +2 in the game, a physical presence. That's what he needs to be. He needs to make better decisions with the puck. He needs to make better decisions in his presence on the ice, when to pinch, when to stay back. Basically, he was in a rut where every decision he made, the puck was ending up in his net. His confidence was really shot. I think putting him up in the press box for a couple games, he said to me last night, it really slowed the game down for him. I think that really helped him. They need him to play close to a Norris Trophy-level caliber defense. He's on a contract now, 7 years, $38.5 million, got $12 million this year. He's not on an entry-level deal anymore. They're expecting superstar-level defense from him. If they don't get it, that's a big problem. And I think he's been one of the real failings so far this season, but they're hoping last night is a turnaround because he was very good last night.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News talking about the Buffalo Sabres. The Jets and the Sabres will take to the ice in Buffalo on Tuesday night. Now, Mike, another guy, you know, you look right up at the top of the NHL scoring leaders, and there is a Buffalo Sabre right up there. Thomas Vanek has just been outstanding so far this year. 11 goals, 12 assists for 23 points through 14 games so far this year. You know, has he taking this next step into superstardom, or is this just sort of a tease that we've seen before from Thomas Vanek?
Well, that remains to be seen. I think they're certainly hoping he's gone into that elite level, and so far this season he's been terrific. He played a little bit in his hometown in Graz in Austria during the lockout, and he really had the sense that he has given people that really rejuvenated him and really brought him back to his roots in hockey. When he came back here to start the season, he was a house of fire. He had 5 points on opening night. He had a five-point game in Boston. He really seems incredibly confident with the puck, almost like every time he shoots it, it's going in. The other thing, his confidence with his passing has really stood out to me. Passes a right-end guy stick. So that line with Vanek, Cody Hodgson, and Jason Pommerville has been one of the top lines in the whole league. One of the problems the Sabres have had, it's for the most part been the only line that's been scoring. But at this point, you're looking for an elite winger in the NHL, Vanek has to be in the conversation. He's been far and away their best player. And I think, you know, he knows this is a time in his career where he should be an elite player. He's 29 years old. He's had a couple 40-goal seasons, but he's as frustrated as anybody by the team's lack of success. He was here in 05 and 06 when he was a younger player, in 07 when they got to the conference final, and they want to get back to that stage, and some of these guys have to raise their game.
Mike, we had you on last year, and in February there was a big trade, and the Sabres acquired Cody Hodgson and Alexander Sulzer for Zach Cassian and Greg Nanny. And Cassian, I like. He's done some good things in Vancouver, but how good does that trade look right now for the Sabres?
You know, I like the trade for both sides. You know, Cassian certainly has been much better this year with Vancouver. Of course, playing with the Sedins really helps. And if you look at it from the Sabres' standpoint, they traded a number one pick in Cassian. They got their number one center. Cody Hodgson has really developed pretty nicely between Vanek and Pommerville. Vanek loves playing with him because Hodgson can pass the puck to either side of the ice. Hodgson's a little efficient on the defensive end. He's up some coverages a few times and has some work to do in that area, but he's their number one center. And those, you know, you don't trade for a number one center usually. I like that deal. And the Sabres got Alexander Sulzer, a nice, good number 5, 6, 7 defenseman for Marc-Andre Grignani, who's in the minor league. Sulzer's got 3 goals for the Sabres, has had a decent plus-minus. He makes some mistakes in the blue line, but he's a serviceable NHL defenseman. The Canucks are happy with Cassian. I think the Sabres are happy. Sometimes you don't have to kick the other guy's butt in a trade. Sometimes a trade can be good for both sides, and I really think this is one of those.
20 minutes to the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News here on TSN 1290.
Mike, you talk about that first line really being the catalyst for the Sabres offensive game, but a player that I really like and have for some time is Tyler Ennis. You know, having had a chance to watch him play on many occasions, just great work ethic all over the ice. What have you thought of his play thus far, and has he found that other player that complements his game?
Well, it's funny you mentioned, because obviously the end of last year, the Sabres might have hit the top line in the league, and it was Ennis between Marcus Foligno and Drew Stafford. And that line has really struggled to find that kind of chemistry again this year. Stafford, in fact, just got his first goal of the season last night. You're right, though. Ennis is really a dynamic kind of center. You worry about the injury factor. You worry about his size. He's starting to produce more in recent games. They're working with him on the defensive end. They're working with Foligno on trying to figure out, is he a banger? Is he a scorer? Foligno's, I think, a little confused in his role at this point. But that's the other line that's really key to this club. They can't just have one line going. I think they thought coming into the season they would have two really solid scoring lines. And, you know, there's no reason to think someday they don't think Tyler Ennis can, you know, they think Tyler Ennis can be 70, 80-point guy in the NHL. There's a guy, he's got good hands, he's got good skills. They just haven't produced like this team has hoped to this point. But those are three guys you look at in these last 30 games here they think they can get some more offense from.
We talk about Tyler Myers before, Mike, and Andre Sequeira. Now he's got a Charlie horse, I believe, and might be out a couple of games. But what have you thought of his progression? I hadn't seen him play much. I caught him a couple of weeks ago and seemed to have a little more confidence with the puck, and seems to have taken his game a little bit of a step forward, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a loss for them. I don't think, you know, he certainly won't play tomorrow against Pittsburgh. I would doubt he'd play Tuesday against the Jets. He's playing, you know, 19, 20 minutes a game. He really has done well in international play, played with Slovakia in the Olympics, and he's become clearly one of their top four defensemen. I mean, it's an interesting team when you look at how they've struggled on the blue line, and the defense has really been terrible at times when you have a veteran like Jordan Leopold with a terrible minus, Myers with a terrible minus. A guy like Sakara plays a lot of minutes, and really the best one by far, you know, has been Christian Ehrhoff, who played almost, I think, 28 minutes last night. He's been very good most of the season. He's been far and away their best defender. But, you know, losing Sakara is going to be, you know, a negative for them. Mike Weber will go back in, but that's a 20-minute-a-game guy you're taking out of the lineup.
Mike, you know, the Sabres made the decision to keep Mikhail Grigorenko all year long. He's played 14 games for the Sabres, so he's been in the lineup pretty much every night. You know, how has his play been, and is he sort of beginning to sort of hit a bit of a wall, or is he still being a solid contributor to the Sabres?
It's an up-and-down process. He's still 18. He's got one goal. I know in practice today they had him working on the fourth line. They've scratched him once. I think they felt there was a certain point of diminishing return if he went back to junior hockey. He could dominate there, but what would he learn? He had played another half a year in junior, played in the World Junior Championships, so they felt to bring him at the NHL level. He probably belongs in the AHL right now, but that's not an option for them. So they have him up here. And let's not forget, guys, they really only had two centers to start the season. They had Cody Hodson and Tyler Ennis. They needed another center. So I think that entered into their decision as well. I thought Grigorenko had a nice game Tuesday in Ottawa. They ran into penalty trouble, and he lost some of his ice time early last night. Ruff didn't like his game. They kind of buried him a little. He didn't. His scratch was against Boston. They have to go with matchups. That might not be the best team Boston for him to play against. He'll be in and out of the lineup based on who they see. But they're thin at center. You're looking at, you know, a 35-year-old like Jochen Hesch is your number three center when you don't have Grigorenko out there. But they've modeled it after what Boston did with Tyler Seguin. If you remember, the Bruins scratched him a lot. He sat out two whole rounds of the playoffs 2 years ago. And then when he hits that age 20-21 range, he's really a top player in the league. And that's certainly what they're hoping they'll see with Grigorenko.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, 15 games through the season so far, the Sabres currently out of a playoff spot, certainly within striking distance of one. Do you think they rebound and end up making the playoffs when this 48-game sprint is finally completed?
You know, on paper, they should be a playoff team. Let's be honest here. They have a $65 million payroll. They have plenty of good players in this club. I predict at the start of the year they'd finish eighth in the East. You know, they were 15th going into the game last night. I still think they can sneak enough wins out of here. They have to pass some teams, but every game's a four-point game. So I think they obviously still have a shot. I'm going to stick for now with what I said, that they sneak into eighth place here. But you know, they've underachieved at this point, and they're still within striking distance. They haven't fallen off the map, so that's a plus. So I say they somehow sneak into eighth.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks as always for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. As always, terrific insight into the Buffalo Sabres.
All right, thanks very much, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes and on the tsn1290.ca website. You can also find it on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Give him a call, 230-6129. Gentlemen, continuing on with our grades of the Jets through the one-quarter mark of this season, sort of consensus was that the forwards can't get better than a C+ as a collective group. Certain forwards did get better. Andrew Ladd, you know, got an A for his efforts and what we've determined. Flip it around and look at the defense now, and we'll look at the goaltending and possibly the special teams as well. You know, obviously the Zach Bogosian gets an incomplete. He's only played that one game, so
not applicable. Yeah,
he got an A if you just want to look at that one game. Mm-hmm. I thought he played well last night, and his speed and everything else was certainly an asset for the Jets. You look at the other, you know, six defensemen on the Jets. You know, who's been the best of those six? Given again that Dustin Byfuglien did miss about a week or 10 days of action with his injury.
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, I'll jump in here first, and then I'll get Richie's take. But even though Byfuglien missed five games, and you know Enstrom's now out, and I think Byfuglien has been their best defenseman, Enstrom is still at the top of the defenseman scoring leaders, and he's provided offense. I think that he has struggled defensively quite a bit. And again, Enstrom is uber-talented. That's right, I used uber.
Which is good, because you've actually been called Goober on more than one occasion.
Absolutely. But, you know, Byfuglien, when he went out of the lineup, Enstrom lost confidence. The Jets lost so much more than just a guy with a good shot on the power play. Byfuglien's really creative with the puck, smart decision maker. He's very crafty. He's physical. He's tough to play against. And I think night in and night out, Byfuglien has been their best defenseman. I think Hainsey's done a good job. I think Stewart, has filled in and picked up the minutes. But, you know, Richie, if we were grading the defense overall, and I know that they didn't want to put in Zach Redmond and Paul Postman. I think Zach Redmond has had varying degrees of success, even though he was, as you noted yesterday, Richie, he was burned on Pittsburgh's first goal. But as a group, I can't give them much more than a C-plus either. I mean, the defense, I think, is talented. I don't think that, you know, the Jets don't... They have NHL defensemen on their team, but Grant Clitsam and Paul Postma, I think, at times have had trouble with, mm-hmm. with the big Eastern forwards in their own arena and on the road. So, I can't give them much more of a grade than C+. Unfortunately, I think yesterday was one of their best games, and I think they can be better. They can definitely be better. There's talent, but I think there are a lot of things that are left to be desired with this group.
I'd go to a B only because of the offensive production from the back end. You have Enstrom and Byfuglien. Those guys are driving, even Postman. Those guys are able to drive offense on a team that hasn't been getting any offensive production from their forwards. So I'll slide them up to a B. But the defense's biggest problem is defense,
yep.
which is worrisome. So, collectively, I will give them a B. That's as high as I'm going to go for any part of the Jets. But just because without Byfuglien, as you mentioned, Ezzie, and obviously now there's no Enstrom, but without Bogosian, the team has trouble scoring, too, at times, and it really shouldn't be that significant. Like, you know, they should help the forwards get... They help the forwards get the puck up and help the forwards create some offense, but the forwards can't seem to do that really consistently. So they rely on the defensemen to do that, and that's why I move them up.
And talking about this decor, you know, when we knew Bogosian was out the first 12 games, so when Byfuglien went out, and now you're already without Bogosian, so you've got Zach Redmond in the lineup, and you've already got Paul Postma, who they wanted to get into the lineup. They gave him the 1-year deal. Mm-hmm. But what's happened is, and maybe so unfairly, is that you've got two rookie defensemen that are playing more minutes and a bigger role than they probably wanted to. And that's the reality. You probably would have liked to put a bigger defenseman, a physical defenseman, a guy that's got some experience, and because you had to move up Hainsey to the top line when Byfuglien was out, now you're asking Postma to now play top 4 minutes. And this is his first year in the NHL. It's tough to ask a guy to do that in a shortened season, and I think he's struggled with it. Yeah, you mentioned his offensive abilities. I agree, Richie. I think Postma's got tons of ability, and I think he has a career ahead of him as an NHL defenseman. But as a group, I don't think that they have compensated for Bogosian's injury enough.
What the Jets really do need...
No, he's back now, but...
What the Jets really do need, guys, and I'm sure if they would tell you this, I don't know if on the record, but I would bet off the record, is a solid stay-at-home left-side defenseman who could kind of be the anchor beside some of the more offensively oriented defensemen. You know, and a guy maybe like Regier, maybe not what Regier is now, but a couple of years ago, Ladislav Smead, not that Edmonton's giving him up, but he'd be a perfect fit for the top four of the Jets on the left side. That's what I think the Jets do need to address, either going on throughout this season or in the upcoming offseason.
Well, certainly, because if you look at the right side of the Jets' defense, especially going forward,
yep.
I mean, assuming Trouba keeps developing at the level that he's been developing as, mm-hmm. you know, Trouba, you know, Bufflin,
yep.
Bogosian, you put those three guys as your right side defenseman, mm-hmm. you're pretty much set there for a while. You're not, you have no complaints and you have no worries there. That doesn't even include Postma, who's also a right side defenseman. Worth noting, here's the projected D pairings for tomorrow's Jets game based on practice today at the Iceplex. Dustin Bufflin lining up with Ron Hainsey. Paul Postma lining up with Zach Bogosian. In that instance, we would assume that Bogosian would flip over to the left side and Postma would play the right side. And Zach Redmond and Mark Stewart playing together. The reason Postma over Bogosian, we were talking about this just off air, the size that Postma brings as opposed to the size that Klitsam has.
Or Klitsam, you mean, yeah. The size, and I think.
Sorry, yeah. Postma over Klitsam.
On an ongoing basis, I'm not sure if they stick with that, but for tomorrow's game, we were speaking about it off the air with Boston's just so big. They're going to probably want the size factor there.
Well, and Richie, you mentioned, you know, what the Jets might be lacking, and you mentioned Robin Regier and Ladislav Smead, and why that's important is because it's always good to look at what works and what teams go all the way. You look at the LA Kings and what two guys, aside from obviously Drew Doughty, were so important last year. Matt Green, just a monster on defense. Rob Scuderi, big bodies. Who was taking care of Evander Kane in front of the net for the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday and giving him a hard time? Brooks Orpik. You look at these guys, and hockey is a rough game. And if you look at what you need, what's sexy is guys that get a lot of points and that can move the puck. Erik Karlsson, Tobias Enstrom, that's important. But when you're hemmed in your own zone and you're going up against Evgeny Malkin and James Neal, what do you need? You need a big, mobile defenseman that can move these guys and keep up with them. And I agree wholeheartedly with Richie. That's what you're... And I would argue that's even more important right now than finding another center for the Jets. I mean, that's what they're missing. I'm a huge fan of Mark Stewart, and he does so many good things on the ice. But you need another guy like Mark Stewart. You need another guy like that.
With probably a bit of a bigger ceiling than Mark Stewart. I mean, you know, if Mark Stewart's going to slot in there as your, you know, and we're just speculating. If the Jets can find another left side defenseman to play in your top four, and Mark Stewart's playing, you know, your left side defense on your third defensive pairing, you're in probably pretty good shape defensively as a team. Mm-hmm. And that's been their problem. I mean, then, you know, it's sort of the opposite of how it is in the offense. You know, from the forwards, they're loaded, or they're, you know, in pretty good shape on the left side. On the left wing, they're in pretty good shape. And in defense, they're in pretty good shape on the right wing. So they now just sort of got to fill in the rest of those gaps.
And Richie mentioned this yesterday at the game. You look at who did LA go out and get after they had these injuries. They went out and got Keaton Ellerbe, a guy who doesn't get a lot of goals, but he's a big, mobile guy. And you know that when he's out there, he's a shutdown guy. And you know, this is nothing against Paul Postma or Zach Redmond. At this point in their careers, they're not established shutdown guys.
No, they have more offensive upside than anything.
They're offensive guys. And you don't want to label a guy like Paul Postma a power play specialist. Yeah, sure, that's probably one of his strong suits. But he's the type of guy that he is more effective when he's moving the puck and he's got the puck on the stick. Same thing with Redmond. Redmond's not an overly physical guy. He's almost more of a Brian Rafalski type, and hopefully he adds that element to his game. He's still young, only 24 years old. But I think that's something that, you know, you might want to look at going forward, you know, as the season goes along. Who are the Jets trying to get for later on in the season and into next year?
Well, the shift quickly before the top of the hour to the goaltending situation. Sorry, Richie, you want to jump in on something?
I'd prefer, Drew, if we save the goaltending and coaching for after the break.
Okay, why don't we do that? Let's take a bit of an early break. And
Richie's
then we
taking
back
the night here.
Richie's that's great.
The afternoon, sorry.
Yeah, the afternoon. Let's come back and we'll talk about the Jets' goaltending and coaching, the grades at the quarter mark. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 2 hours down, 1 hour to go, live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We welcome producer Remus, or is he now producer photographer Remus, into the producer's chair doing the 2 o'clock swap out. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. If you're interested in hearing some audio from Jets players and head coach Claude Noel after practice earlier today, you can find it currently on illegalcurve.com. Jets Bruins tomorrow, 5 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center. Hustler and Lawless, 2 p.m. here on this fine station. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 4 p.m. Going through the Jets roster, talking about the grades of the team. We've done the forwards, we've done the defensemen. Now we need to do the special teams and the coaching. Richie, or the, and the goaltending as well, pardon me. You know, let's start with Coach Claude Noel. You know, he's been a head coach of this team for, you know, obviously a full season and about a quarter now, given the abbreviated season. You know, certainly not, we're not calling for changes to be made in the head coaching position. That's, that would be a bridge far too far at this point in time. You know, how have you thought of Claude Noel's efforts so far, Claude Noel and the entire coaching staff so far this year?
Hasn't been great, Drew. I mean, yeah, again, as you said, you're not calling for heads just yet. I mean, he's been coach of this team for, what, about 96 games or whatever it is?
Sure.
It's certainly not a big enough, long enough time frame to really judge him yet. And there's always that difference, you know, that, that the fine line when you're judging a coach and when he gets put on a team and you wonder if the work ethic's always there for the squad. Is it the coach not getting the most out of the players, or is it the players that are the problem, and then if they switch coaches, it's the same problem exists? You know, kind of like Washington, you could look and say, well, they still thought Semin was a problem. They still thought certain things, you know, Ovechkin hasn't been fixed since Boudreaux left. So are those core guys, are they the issue, or, you know, what is the issue? So there's a lot of ways and angles to look at this from. Having said that, I do think that so far this season, he hasn't really found the right mix. Claude Noel has, in terms of forward lines, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the goaltending hasn't been great, and we'll talk about that grade in a little bit. The special teams has been lacking. It's still, you know, only 13 games into the season. But overall, I don't think you can give the coaching staff anything more than a, I mean, they're essentially tied for last place in the Eastern Conference, so a C at most.
Is he?
Well, Richie raises a good point, because I'm a big fan of Claude Noel, and, you know, but the year before he was coach of the Winnipeg Jets, did obviously a great job with the Manitoba Moose, and there's been some change this year, and there's been decisions that he's had to make, and there's things that, that, you know, I've noticed about the team that I don't particularly like with lineup, with, pardon me, combinations, but you know, a positive early on in the season, you know, they were playing a lot better and they were getting some wins on the road. And that was a thing where you look at Claude Noel's impact and the coaching staff as a whole. How are they getting their players ready for these road games? Because there were letdowns with their compete level and their effort on the road last year. And they fed off of the home crowd last year, and they didn't feed off of themselves really on the road last year. But as far as, you know, the coaching staff specifically and the job they've done, it is tough to give them that high of a grade, because when you look at where they are and their special teams, neither the power play or the penalty kill has been good. And the penalty kill, in fact, has been pretty bad. And, you know, I've said this on the show, and Richie's also said this on the show before I said it, in fact, and he really sold me on it. You know, on the penalty kill, I don't necessarily like the personnel who they're developing as their penalty killers. And you look at last night, James Wright is out there. I don't know, just James Wright as a guy with 30 games of NHL experience, should he be going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, power play? I would say probably not.
On the flip side, I mean, did Kevin Cheveldayoff address their penalty killing needs at all with his acquisitions in the offseason? That's where you have to defend the coaches, because yep, he hasn't really.
Well, and the coaches can only coach the players that they're given.
Sure. Yep.
And I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Olli Jokinen, everyone had very high hopes for when he came into the season. I mean, he's certainly a bona fide NHL center.
Yep.
But, you know, it's hard to look at this Alexei Ponikarovsky acquisition, the brief 12-game acquisition that it was, without asking yourself or wondering, you know, what was the purpose of it all along? You know, what was Alexei Ponikarovsky going to bring to this team? How was he going to, was the team at a point where Alexei Ponikarovsky was really going to be an asset on this team in the offseason when they acquired him?
Well, they traded him for a 7th rounder and a 4th rounder, so his value wasn't much.
Right.
He didn't do much.
Then why did they acquire him in the first place? You know, and that's a question that I asked that sort of rhetorically, because that's a question that, you know, when we were on Wednesday night when that news broke, and, you know, we were making sort of some jokes about the Alexei Ponikarovsky era in Winnipeg and what would you best remember of it.
Yep.
And obviously, we are being tongue firmly in cheek when we were saying that sort of thing. But, you know, it does leave you wondering, you know, what was the plan? What was the organizational plan behind bringing in Alexei Ponikarovsky?
Richie, if you go back to these moves, I mean, sure, the adding size isn't a plan. I mean, that's, you're trying to get bigger. But the problem is, isn't a guy who's 5'11" and who is physical going to give you that the same things that a big body would give? Well, big body who doesn't hit isn't really making you any better.
Sure. I think most people would say, most fans would say, if there's a 5'10" guy who's going to come out and even though he's undersized, he might be a bit of a bulldog and everything else, and he gives that effort and everything else, you'd rather have that guy than a 6'2", 6'3" guy who's plays soft, doesn't use his body, doesn't use his size. And I mean,
and again,
it's hard to find 12 more invisible games for a hockey team than what Alexei Ponikarovsky played for the Jets this season.
And again, to be clear, you know, we're not throwing him completely under the bus, but Alexei Ponikarovsky went to the finals last year with the Devils. He started his career off with Toronto, and he's bounced around from team to team. And the reason, what he gives you is he can score. I mean, you put him on with Kovalchuk and Zajac, he can score. But the problem is, he's wildly inconsistent.
Also,
he disappears for 20 games at a time.
This team doesn't have a Kovalchuk or a Zajac. That's a bigger problem. You know, you end up fine with acquiring Ponikarovsky when you're playing with two supremely talented guys like that, but that's not a luxury this team has. And so I don't know that Alexei Ponikarovsky, if you're going to spend $1.9 million in free agency, was the best use of $1.9 million for this team. To their credit, they bailed out pretty early on it, as that was probably, you know, you see a mistake, you want to rectify it as quickly as possible. But it makes you wonder if they had spent that money more wisely in the offseason and they get Claude Noel, a player more suited to be, say, a penalty kill specialist or something along those lines, you know, perhaps that's a better use of the money.
Don't disagree, Drew. I don't disagree at all. You know, if you're looking at Ponikarovsky's stay here, essentially what you're doing is, you know, you're trading him and for Tangrady, you washing the seventh round picks. So you're essentially trading, you're essentially buying
a fourth round pick.
A fourth rounder for 12 games of Alexei Ponikarovsky. So 12 games divided by 82. So whatever percentage that is of his salary, you're paying that much money for a fourth round pick. And I'm not sure what a fourth round pick is worth monetarily speaking. I know there are people who value those things, and I mean, I think my colleague and our friend wrote that the chances of a fifth or a fourth round pick playing one game in the NHL is something around like 30% playing one game. So
it's a limited value pick in a trade.
I mean, third is when you get people talking, and even that. And the deadline may be second. We said this on Wednesday. Second, obviously, more so. And then first are that gold currency. But even the first and the bottom half of the first round, it's a bit of a crapshoot. This draft apparently is the best draft in many years. And it's not just one or two guys at the top. There's more than two guys at the top. So,
yep. Well, it's a question we've asked off the record.
And the
off air.
The fourth round pick is not until next year, right?
Yeah, that's right. The fourth round pick isn't even in this deep draft. It's in next year's draft, and who knows what that looks like. It's a question we've asked off air in the course of our conversations. Gary Lawless asked this question in the Winnipeg Free Press earlier today in his article. You know, is this team better off hitting rock bottom? You know, it's hard to say that they're not better off.
Are they unintentionally doing that right now?
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, and we saw Edmonton unintentionally do it when they first started, you know. Yeah. You know, everyone forgets that, you know, Steve Tambellini had plans and hopes on the Oilers being a playoff team before they hit rock bottom for consecutive years.
Right, and they wouldn't have acquired Nikolai Habibulin if they didn't think that.
If this team continues to struggle, if this team is in the same sort of position, 11th, 12th, 13th, come the trade deadline, and there's no real sign that they're going to make a run, and even if they do make a run, the best case scenario is eighth and maybe losing in four or five games. You know, should Olli Jokinen, the guy they gave the 2-year deal, should he be on the market?
Well, I don't know who trades for him. We've talked about that in the show. $4.5 million, 2-year deal. Where's he going to slot it? Good teams in the National Hockey League, in my opinion, don't want him to be a top two center if they want to win the cup. And those are the teams that are going to trade for him, is generally the teams that want to win the cup. And if they wanted him in the offseason at that price,
they could have got him.
Injuries happen, don't get me wrong, but I don't think his market value is high. So,
yeah, I might agree with that. You know, to answer your question, Drew, the Jets are in tough to make the playoffs. Not just where they are now, but, you know, it's a condensed schedule, and they're not one of the strongest teams on paper, or, you know, in general, they're still a team that I would say is on the upslope of their development. And the Jets, is it better that they finish 13th or 14th and get a draft pick, a higher draft pick, pardon me, in the top five, say? Absolutely.
The back to Jokinen for a second, just kind of thinking as Ezzy was talking there. at the same time, you know,
rather incoherently.
No, and you know, things do change, and if you look at a team like Anaheim, a team that's on obviously a hot run, didn't realize 10-2-1, maybe they feel like Bobby Ryan fits well on the wing, and they want to add a guy like Jokinen to go with Getzlaff and Koivu, and you have Finnish guys there, and you have Solani, and maybe they think that mix. So there's always possibilities of trading a guy.
So what you're saying is that on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show at 2:10 right now, let's start the official Olli Jokinen to end. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not. I'm just saying, like, there are openings for him. I just don't think the market will be that considerable for him. But Drew, to your point about, you know, in terms of failing to succeed. It is if you look at teams in the National Hockey League, like the Chicago Blackhawks with Taves and Kane, like Pittsburgh, as Gary mentioned, and we've talked about in the show before, with Fleury, Staal, Crosby, and Malkin, you know, there are teams that have, and obviously with Edmonton now, with Nugent Hopkins and Hall and Yakupov and Eberle a little bit later on in the first round, there are teams that have used that method, and the argument in Winnipeg would have been you come in and start that because by the time you get those players up for renegotiation, the fan contracts for tickets are up, and they're thinking, well, I want to be a part of this. Now, I don't think it'll be a problem to renew them in any event, but that could have been one argument, is you have the fans secured anyways, so might as well really play poorly and get those top draft picks and then get them ready to go, and those players will be up for contracts right when your fans are up for contracts, and you can bring them all in together. Well, there's different ways to skin a cat, though, Drew, and there's different methods, and there's other teams who don't do that. I mean, you look at Colorado, you know, they have Deshane, they have Landeskog, and they have, you know, now they have obviously the O'Reilly issue and other things, and he was a second-round pick, but the point is they have been bad for a long time, and they're still bad. So
it's not, I mean, and then you look at Edmonton, who's been bad for so many years, but they have such an excitement level behind them. So it's not a foolproof situation.
But let me talk about Edmonton for 1 second before we go to break.
Okay.
If Edmonton doesn't sign Justin Schultz, and there was no guarantee, by the way, that they were going to sign Justin Schultz.
Mm-hmm. Because 29 other teams apparently
wanted him. He could have gone to Vancouver, could have gone to the Rangers. If they don't sign Justin Schultz, they have a ton of money locked up in their forwards. And, you know, we talked to Kyle Kozier about this, I guess, a week and a half ago on our Wednesday show, you know, Klefbom and other defensemen that they have in the system. But they're still years away, and then they have their guys up for renegotiation, Gagne, eventually Yakupov. Maybe they max out of their forward, and they don't have enough money for defense. And what about the goaltending? So there's no foolproof system here.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, rather, and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Reminder, Wednesday night, 6 p.m., NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be on this fine radio station. Already confirmed as a guest, Assistant General Manager of the Dallas Stars, Frank Provenzano, is going to join us Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. Showtime, 6 p.m. for NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
We're only an hour this week.
Only an hour this week. We're giving up an hour. Our buddy Paul Edmonds in the inside pitch is going to be on at 7 o'clock. So 1 hour of NHL Midweek on Wednesday. And, of course, next Saturday, 6 a.m. start time for
what?
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Did you say 6 a.m.?
I did. I know you didn't know that time actually existed.
6 a.m.
6 a.m. The Jets play at noon in Philadelphia next Saturday. So we're going to be on 6 a.m.
I guess I'll go to bed at 8 o'clock on Friday night.
8 in the morning, you mean?
I think what will actually happen is he won't go to bed.
Yeah, it's definitely. I think they call that pulling a hustler, if I'm not mistaken. But anyways, 6 a.m. next Saturday morning for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Make sure we have lots of coffee, Red Bull, and I don't know what else.
Yeah, I don't know what else either. It's going to be a doozy.
It's going to be a heck of a show when Ezzy's in bed and the show starts.
Hey, but my track record improved, though, remember. Since that one show, after Gary Lawless told me to you know,
be more
smarten up in the press box, I haven't missed an early morning show since.
Who has a better track record, Ezzy Ginsberg or Matt Cook?
Well, that's a good segue, Richard. Well done. And, of course, that's a good segue
too soon?
Discussing Erik Karlsson's injury for the Ottawa Senators. Obviously, the hockey world was abuzz about that injury that occurred Wednesday night when, you know, Matt Cook. Well, let's ask, first and foremost, we know that Karlsson had surgery on his Achilles tendon.
Yep.
It was cut. It was a 70% cut of the Achilles tendon. He's out 3 to 4 months. First question, deliberate or not deliberate?
Well, after the TSN panel analyzed it for 4.5 hours, I from different angles and from multiple sources.
This is a Pruder film of the NHL.
I'm surprised they didn't bring Howie Meeker back with the telestrator, but...
is he still alive?
You know what? No, is he not? Did he pass away, Howie Meeker? I apologize if he did. I thought he was still alive.
He's alive in 89.
Okay, good, because that would have made me look like even more of a big idiot than I already am. You know, I don't know it now anymore. When I first saw it, and I believe it happened Wednesday night after we were on air. Am I wrong about that? It was Wednesday night.
It happened Wednesday night. We saw it. We were watching
it.
Okay,
it was towards the end of our midweek show. And I saw it, and I, you know, kind of looked like an innocent play, and Aaron Ward broke it down, and then Craig Button later on That's Hockey Tonight broke it down. But I don't know anymore now, you know. I know that the NHL Player Safety Department, Richie, has to look at these incidences separately and not factor in who it is. But when you look at it, I don't know. I mean, his foot is up. And you know, to say that a guy tried to specifically injure the guy's Achilles tendon, I mean, that's malicious. But I'm not sure. I was leaning towards it not being an intentional play, and now I'm not sure anymore, because when you look at it, and again, I joked about it earlier, you know, TSN TV obviously breaking it down for 4 hours. I, you know, now that I look at it again, I think it might have been semi-intentional.
Richard?
The NHL looks at these plays, you know, as he just kind of alluded to it, they look at the play in terms of, is the act worthy of suspension? And if so, then they take into account the history of the player, as opposed to taking into account the history of the player
first.
Yeah. While considering the act. And you play hockey, which we all do have, will in the future. I don't think anybody intentionally tries to do this, and I think if they do, it's so darn difficult to actually do it. I mean, you can't even think that somebody, and I don't like Matt Cook. I never have. I think he's a dirty player. I don't have any respect for him. I have no respect for Matt Cook. The way he took out Mark Savard's career, who was a great player to watch and seemed to have little remorse for it, and has only changed because, to me, he's had to and wants to make money, and has had talks, has been spoken to by the likes of Mario Lemieux and Ray Shiro. And, you know, you could argue, speaking to people in Pittsburgh, that his effectiveness level has gone down considerably when he hasn't been able to agitate and be that dirty player. I think he's been suspended, Eugene Melnyk alluded to, 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so, I believe. In fact, I believe he should have been suspended for more of those incidents than he has been. All that said, I don't believe that he was intentionally trying to slice Erik Karlsson with his skate. I think even a dirty player like Matt Cook doesn't have that intention. I thought it was a freak incident. I understand Eugene Melnyk's frustration. I mean, he loses any chance of the playoffs. You lose the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, in my opinion, and I think in the writer's opinion, for the season, really. And you worry about his future and if he's going to be as effective, which I think he will be.
Yeah.
But I don't think the play was intentional.
Travis Zajac had an Achilles injury, and he was able to come back.
Yeah. But we remember Timu had the similar Achilles
injury.
He's
been good for another 20 years after that Achilles injury. But another thing, and I know you want to get to it, Drew, with the Kevlar socks, and that's something that, you know, I think needs to be brought to the forefront. Player safety always has to be the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me interrupt you, Ezzy. Is it just me? Am I the only one astounded at how cavalier the players themselves are about player safety? If these socks truly are like the regular NHL hockey socks, and there's no real difference to them, and that's what you hear, and you know, I don't know because I haven't seen them, but why wouldn't you wear them? Tell me why you wouldn't wear them if they're exactly the same.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yeah?
I think it's somewhat related. Why wouldn't you wear a visor?
I would.
And the question is, obviously, that to that point, they say their vision is impeded. Well, and my point would be that some of the best players in the NHL today, you know, Crosby, those guys all wear visors. So,
and you know what impedes your vision even more? When you don't have an eye because you got a stick in it.
Well, and look at Manny Malhotra just getting on that point.
The season's done.
Being set. Yep. Being,
likely,
you know,
possibly his career being done.
I give Mike Gillis credit for taking into account Manny Malhotra's best interest in life, not just in hockey. But back to the point about the socks, you know, if the socks are safer, why not wear them? If the visor's safer, why not wear them?
But
the players do not take it upon themselves for whatever reason to impose these rules. And it's like the NHL has to fight with the players to protect the players. And it's kind of opposite of any kind of CBA negotiation.
If I'm an owner, and I mean, you look, if I'm an owner of a team and you look at the players you sign and they're your assets, you know, I would write it into their contract. Now, I don't know if you can based on the terms of the CBA, but if you can't, you should be able to. I would write it into the contract. Not so much the visors, because, look, I'd wear a visor, you know, every day that I'm on the ice, I would wear a visor. So it doesn't make any sense not to. But, you know, if socks have absolutely no difference, if socks don't make any difference whatsoever, and you can't tell me that, you know, the feel of a sock is that different.
You want to know why the sock issue is now so important? And there's nothing good that comes out of something like this. Erik Karlsson, he was arguably a Hart Trophy nominee, at this point in the season. Clearly the favorite for the Norris again this year. But the positive that will possibly come out of this is that it will protect the next person. And it's not just for the NHL or the AHL. It's that you'll prevent this. If something similar happens in minor hockey, you want to look at anything that's going to possibly prevent an injury. So if these new socks with this material, that it's obviously less able, you're able to puncture the sock, you should look at it. And if you can then regulate it and make it mandatory, just like we're going to have Les Rikus on to talk about, Dr. Les Rikus to talk about mouth guards, then you do it.
Well, that's my point. If I'm an owner of a team and I say, I want to sign you to a big long-term contract, but I want to do everything in my power to ensure that you're going to be on the ice for that contract and for the entirety of that contract, you're going to wear these socks. And if you don't want to sign here, so be it. But if it's about socks, if that's your, you know, the hill you're going to die on, which is the new favorite expression in the NHL, if that hill is about socks, then I think that player really does have some thinking that they need to reconsider.
What about Don Fehr? I mean,
of course. I mean, the fact that the Players Association...
Is the burden not on Don Fehr to protect the players and think of creative ways to do so? Not even that creative ways. But at the same time, I don't know what his position is on these things, but he also was a guy who believed that the rights of... The rights of steroid users in baseball. And, you know, maybe that made them more money, but I think the evidence... It's clear that steroids certainly have a negative effect bodily function.
But there's no correlation necessarily, because Kevlar socks or the regular socks versus the Kevlar socks, there's no financial windfall for a player not to use it.
If the player believes in his head that he doesn't play as well with them, which I don't know why he would, then, yeah, he thinks it's in the player's best interest to play as they think they can be best and therefore make more money. It doesn't necessarily make sense to the outside public, but maybe it makes sense to them.
You know, let's play some audio. This is Ron Hainsey talking prior to yesterday's game, so at Jets practice on Friday, talking about the Kevlar socks issue.
The skate just comes in the wrong spot. The wrist has happened a few times with guys' tendons, and it just, every once in a while, those catch guys the wrong way.
Could the league mandate the Kevlar socks?
I don't know. I don't know if they're in position to mandate. We haven't mandated visors yet, so I highly doubt that a mandate of Kevlar socks is on the agenda next week, but if guys can get comfortable and wear them, there's no downside to wearing them. But if guys are used to different things in their skates, then some guys are going to be uncomfortable, and if the guys are uncomfortable skating, they're going to have a hard time with it. So for me, I always wore thin socks. They're pretty thin. It wasn't an issue. I was able to wear them quickly. For some guys, it might be an issue as far as skating, and it's hard to argue there's more important things than skating out here. So.
You know what's more important, or what the players are more used to than socks? Getting a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Well, and Ron Hainsey's speaking from a guy who wears both a visor and Kevlar socks, so maybe people should be listening to him.
Yeah,
absolutely. Ron Hainsey's got it right.
I would agree with you. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Les Rikus to talk about the issue of mouth guards in professional hockey, of course, or in hockey, and also in all sorts of sports. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. Last segment, we were talking about player safety in the NHL, and it's only fitting that we're going to continue sort of on that theme, and we're going to bring in Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center to talk about the issue of mouth guards in amateur sport, professional sport, and really just, you know, for the weekend warrior who plays sort of rec league sports, hockey, soccer, football. Dr. Rikus, thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, thank you very much.
You know, doctor, I wanted to start with, you know, in this day and age, really the number one health concern that people hear about when it comes to professional sports is that of concussions. And, you know, everything that we do in professional sports is about safety and how to mitigate concussions, how to prevent concussions. You know, mouth guards, something as simple as a mouth guard, do they have a significant effect in reducing the impact of concussions?
I don't know whether or not it's going to be a significant effect. It's certainly going to minimize the shock to the jaw and the head, and that's really what we want to see. We want to make sure that, you know, when somebody gets a blow from underneath their chin, that at least we can cushion some of that, and that's going to transfer to the brain and hopefully reduce the amount of concussions that we see.
So, you know, something as simple as that mouth guard that you mentioned would, you know, obviously, you know, it's a blow to the head is a blow to the head, but just
correct.
A simple, you know, procedure of that nature will have some effect in preventing a concussion?
Correct. There's no question that it does help. Again, you know, what percentage of concussions could be prevented by wearing a mouth guard, I can't tell you. It does depend on where the blow is, for sure.
We were talking off air, I believe, before the last segment. Richard and Ezra both, you know, sort of coached amateur hockey, youth hockey, you know, a couple of years ago. And there's a rule in youth hockey that you have to wear a mouth guard. We're not 100% sure of what age that kicks in, but these guys, they were coaching contact hockey, and there was a rule that a mouth guard had to be worn at all times, and any player caught sort of removing the mouth guard from his mouth, whether it just be skating to the bench or anything along those lines, was issued a penalty. You know, in your opinion, would you like to see mouth guards become mandatory sort of across the board in all youth sports and in those, you know, adult recreational sports, soccer, football, hockey that we see all over the place?
That's a great question. And yes, we would love to see it brought into the school system for basketball, soccer. I mean, any type of sport where there's a potential for a collision is a potential for damage to teeth. And also for concussions. So if we can get it into the school system, you know, right in through training when they go for phys ed training in university to become a phys ed instructor, you know, get them used to making sure that that all the students are wearing mouth guards, it'll be a lot better.
Dr. Rikus, it's Ezra here. You know, it's funny. I think everyone knows now that you're expected to wear a mouth guard when you play hockey. You know, in rec leagues, some guys will wear them, some guys won't. But definitely in minor hockey, you have to wear one. Do you think that there's maybe even a stigma in other sports, such as soccer, basketball, that it's somewhat weird or something, or there's no reason to wear a mouth guard?
You're absolutely right. I mean, how many professional basketball players do you see wearing a mouth guard? And most times, you know, our youth will mimic what they see in professional sports. So when you see Andrew Ladd biting on his mouth guard all the time while it's not inside his mouth, this is what the kids are doing, and we see all the time now, kids are bringing their mouth guards into the office after they've had them for a month, and they're completely chewed up and destroyed. So they will often mimic what they see, and if they don't see the pro players wearing mouth guards, they're not going to want to wear one.
You mentioned coming into the office for a mouth guard, and now obviously, you know, being a dentist and everything else, you see, you know, you have capabilities and technologies that would allow a different kind of mouth guard than what somebody might go and get off, you know, the local sporting goods shelf, you know, where they just boil it and put it into the mouth. Can you sort of explain the difference between the two and the effect that the two different kinds have?
For sure. And let me just start off by saying that at least getting a boil mouth guard is half the battle. You know, I mean, if at least you're wearing something inside your mouth, you're going to be doing some sort of protection. The difference between the store-bought, you know, the shock doctor mouth guards versus ones that you'll get it from your dentist is quite simple. A fit is much far superior for the ones that we take an impression of your teeth and we get a custom-fit mouth guard. So you don't have to worry about it falling out of your mouth, especially when you do get into a collision, it's not going to come flying out of your mouth. It's still going to be there protecting you. It's not nearly as bulky, so you'll be able to speak a lot clearer. You're not going to need to be taking it in and out of your mouth. You're not going to have that same type of gag reflex that some people will have when they're wearing this big, bulky piece of rubber. So right away, fit is most important, and if you've got comfort from there, you're going to want to wear it more. You're not going to be playing with it as much. And it just transfers on from there.
How easy is it to get one of the custom fit mouth guards? Is it, you know, because, you know, stock boil sounds pretty easy, but if it's not providing the same level of protection and comfort, it sounds like the custom fit would be the better of the two options.
No question, it is the best way to go, and it's as simple as seeing your dentist, telling them that you need a mouth guard made, and they'll set up an appointment to take impressions of your teeth. So you're getting custom molds made of your teeth, and from that mold, that's where they'll make the mouth guard.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center, discussing the importance of mouth guards and really oral and mouth health when it comes to playing professional sports. Now, Dr. Rikus, in addition to concussions, which we obviously discussed, you know, you see it in sports, amateur sports, professional sports, errant sticks, errant elbows, you know, just general innocent contact that can have do damage to the mouth area. How often do you see incidents like that? And would, again, staying on the same topic, a mouth guard certainly would mitigate effects of taking a high stick or a puck to the face.
Well, let's start off by talking about a Friday afternoon that I was playing hockey.
Sure.
And got a puck clearing shot right in the mouth. Had I not been wearing my mouth guard, the damage would have been way, way worse. And as it was, you know, I mean, a dentist going to play Friday afternoon rec hockey, you're not expecting that you're going to come away without any teeth. So having the mouth guard in prevented me from losing any teeth, didn't break any teeth. You know, I had a big fat lip, and my lip was cut, and that's not going to be prevented by wearing the mouth guard. But what you're hoping to do is minimize the damage that the puck or stick or elbow is going to cause. So there's no question that by wearing the mouth guard, you're going to see far less injuries to teeth. We see it all the time. How many times per week? Sometimes we see several. Sometimes we see one. Sometimes we see none. But for the most part, during the hockey season, we will see a number of incidents that have occurred, whether it's a stick to the face or a puck to the mouth or an elbow, even a head underneath the chin that's caused the teeth to connect, and people are spitting out teeth, and it's not good. So we definitely want to see some sort of mouth guard in there. It's in everybody's best interest for that to happen, but accidents still do happen. One of the biggest injuries that you can have, actually, is a stick to the tooth rather than a puck. A puck is one of those things. It's a big weight coming at you very, very fast, and more often than not, it'll cause a fracture to the tooth in the part that you can see. When you get a stick, you get a vibration, and you get fracturing under the gum sometimes. And usually when that happens, the tooth is shot.
You know, we'll let you go on this last point, Dr. Rikus, but from my perspective, I imagine it would be a lot cheaper to get a custom-fit mouth guard from your local dentist than it would be to prepare for to pay for, you know, a comprehensive dental surgery.
Absolutely.
Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight into just another layer of protection that you know, parents and athletes themselves can take to prevent injuries.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dr. Rikus. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, again, it's the same sort of thing we were talking about with the Kevlar socks and visors to a lesser extent. I mean, visors, I don't understand why you wouldn't wear a visor, but I get that there might be a sight issue. I mean, that's what they talked about with goalie masks, you know, way back when, is that you couldn't see down in a goalie mask.
Yeah, and you know, Drew, you can listen to us all you want, but really listen to Dr. Les Rikus. He knows what he's talking about, obviously, and you should wear your mouth guard at all times. And, you know, Richie and I at one point had to really sit our kids down and say, you know, you're getting penalties for not having your mouth guard in. This is simple. I mean, this is your protection. You got to do it. You play hockey. You're playing hockey. It's a physical game.
It's like wearing a seatbelt while driving.
Exactly.
It's there, and it's there to protect you.
Exactly. You're going to get fined if you're caught not wearing one. So, you know, you should be wearing it at all times.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Now, Richie, when you played, you guys still play to some extent, more so in the summer than the winter when their schedule's free.
Yeah, I retired from pro competition.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. Right. You know, do you guys, you know, is it now sort of, do you see more people wearing mouth guards nowadays when you guys are out on the ice?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I think there's no question about it. And I think also, even you play shinny now, people are all just, they pop in a mouth guard before they go out there, and why not have it? You know, I've played outside before years ago, and your friend's puck slides up a stick when you're playing shinny, boom, teeth.
Yeah.
You're protected, yeah.
You sort of want to keep your teeth for the as long as you can have them in the course of your life.
Yeah, unless you're Bobby Clark. I mean, it's not that flattering.
No, exactly right. And unless you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I play shinny, no one's paying me millions of dollars to
pride, Drew,
to lose my teeth. So I don't mind keeping them in my mouth where they seem to be doing some good work.
Yep.
Eating. I really enjoy the eating aspect of it.
Well, your teeth do get a lot of workouts.
Yeah, when
eat.
It comes to eating. You know,
oh, yeah, you don't want to be eating your meals out of a straw.
No,
right?
That's where I'm an MVP, really.
You'd be like a marathon runner. I've eaten.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we go to break and we'll come back with one segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard's favorite band, singer, whatever you want to call him, brings us back for the final segment on this Saturday afternoon. Big thank you to Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview or our interviews with Jack Edwards or Mike Harrington, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also download them from our website, illegalcurve.com, or on the TSN 1290 website, tsn1290.ca. One final segment this Saturday afternoon. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Saturday afternoon. It's sort of a weird one. A court case about Winnipeg Jets season tickets came to a resolution this week with Court of Queen's Bench Justice Morris Kaufman siding with Darlene Gibb in a dispute about Jets season tickets over her brother-in-law, John Langstaff. As a result of the case, Darlene Gibb has won ownership of Jets season tickets. In the course of the trial, a representative of True North Sports and Entertainment told the court that about 700 people had transferred ownership of tickets after the first Jets season. Are you surprised about that number? And if so, did you think it would be higher or lower?
I thought that was actually about right, Drew. You know, a lot of people bought the tickets and you weren't sure exactly. You know, because of we were on the air that day, everybody was so eager. Maybe some people bought the tickets who didn't necessarily want them for the long haul, or they had arrangements or whatever it may be. So 700 sounds about right based on who we speak to. We speak to a lot of season ticket holders in the chatter. There were certain people, you know, who bought them from out of town and weren't able to make it happen. And so things like that, 700 does sound about right.
Yeah, not too surprising. That number is exactly where if you had to make a guess, it would probably be around. Maybe it's not that exact number, but somewhere around there. And the importance is that most people are hanging onto their tickets, and the waiting list is still there with people that would gladly scoop up those tickets.
This following happened at a Manitoba rink earlier this week or in the very recent past. Remus?
Just because he's a midget!
He's not a midget, okay? He? Enough. He's what a hockey he? Player. Well, enough of your midget.
Thank you for calling my son a midget.
Don't touch me, or I'm going to take your glasses in. You got that?
Thank you for calling my son a midget.
I got everything
don't
on tape. It's
me.
Okay. I got
don't
it all on tape.
Or I'll cave your glasses in. You got me? What am I threatening you? Don't touch me, or I'm going to cave your glasses in.
I got him on this. Yeah. I got him on tape, Derek. Got him on tape.
The question, obviously, that's beyond abhorrent. And you can find the guy's name if you want to. It's online. You can do it. We don't need to publicize his name, probably for his kids' benefit more than anything. Should parents that want their kids to play amateur sports, are we getting to the point where parents should attend a good sportsmanship seminar prior to the start of the season?
It doesn't hurt. There's no issue with that. Why not? They're going to be taking the children to the games. They're going to be participating. They're going to be emotionally invested in it, like I think all parents are, to some more than others. But yeah, Drew, I think that's a good idea. Why not?
I think absolutely yes. I was talking to you guys about this yesterday at the Jets game when this news came out that there's this parent. Over my years of playing hockey, coaching hockey, watching other people play hockey, I've seen countless parents lose their minds. I remember playing in an unnamed arena when a parent saw his kid fighting and jumped on the ice and went after the ref. So, I mean, it's...
I'd like to hear more about that story.
We're not going to get into that. But we've seen coaching and we've seen...
I spent enough time with you and you've never told me that story?
I think I have. Well, I was also 13 years old, so it was a long time ago. But
and you were the dad.
Exactly. I was the dad of my kid. Shout out to Junior. if anybody's played hockey, they know that there are crazy parents out there. And to be honest with you, it seems year after year, Richie and I were talking about our dates coaching a couple of years back. I mean, parents, you know, take hockey really seriously and can sometimes let their emotions get the better of them. And that's fine. Encourage your son, encourage your daughter when they're playing hockey, but you should not be mocking defenseless kids, whether they're 6 years old or 16 years old, 18 years old, it doesn't matter. And, you know, I think we should take a look at our own actions as fans and parents, even though I'm not a parent, but apparently I am now. But no, why not? I mean, you know, it's like bullying is a big thing. This parent is a coward, and he was bullying a kid, and he shouldn't have been doing that. And he deserved to be, he deserves to be shamed on YouTube. I saw that he said that he doesn't deserve it. Yes, you do deserve it. That's unacceptable, and you're a coward for doing that.
I have to tell this story. It's not. I was probably 7 years old, maybe playing hockey, and my hockey career, the dreams of my hockey career, probably ended when I was 6 years old.
So in the 1930s?
Yeah, in the 1930s, exactly. Right. So my dad's. I'm playing house league, and I can barely skate. And my dad would always holler at me. I mean, I'm fairly short still, but I was a pretty small kid. I was pretty short, and my dad would always holler from the stands at me to play as if I was 6'4". So he yelled at me. He'd yell from the stands, 6'4", 6'4", you know, encouragement. So nothing wrong with that. Then there was one game where I don't know what was happening in the course of the game, but he got a little bit carried away, and he hollers at me, and he says, "Hit him! Hit the other kid!" And immediately he felt the most humiliated, basically because I couldn't skate. So it was just an accomplishment for me to stand on my two skates.
Didn't Sheldon also yell that at you for piano lessons, too, though?
To hit the piano? Yeah, exactly. Anyways, that was that's very funny. But
Was your nickname when you played hockey, that young Drew?
That wasn't my nickname when I played hockey, Richard. I had that nickname because
What's
I had
nickname?
Glasses. The nickname was Skippy.
Why?
Because I looked, with the glasses I had, I looked like Skippy from Family Ties. So that's what the story is. Yeah. Richard loves that story more than anything else for some very odd reason.
You did have nice, fashionable glasses when you were younger.
Yeah, I did. I was much more fashionable as a child than I am now. Tragic news out of Las Vegas, as despite being over for about 6 weeks now, the NHL lockout has claimed another victim. Due to scheduling difficulties, the NHL awards will not be able to be held in Las Vegas this year. Fear not, though, as the awards will return to Vegas next year, as there are 2 years remaining on the NHL's contract with the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. With Vegas not a possibility this year, what other exciting, exotic locale should the NHL choose to host their end-of-the-year awards ceremony?
The internet.
Oh, that's amazing, Richie.
Yeah, that's
exactly. Locale. You know what? I wish the awards would. You know, I'm old school. I like them in Toronto, but as far as you know, exotic locale, have them in Dubai. I don't know. I mean, in Las Vegas, nobody cares about the awards. It's a weird. You know, keep it in Canada where you know people care about it, or have it in New York.
Sure.
I know that's not much of a funny response to that, but I kind of took that pretty seriously.
You did.
But I take myself
pretty
seriously.
You did take that question really seriously, I got to tell you. Yeah. Final question for Rapid Fire. People in Winnipeg awoke on Friday morning to news of a meteor exploding over Russia. The effects of the meteor were felt closest to the Ural Mountains, some 950 miles east.
Drew, I didn't realize you had a master's degree in human geography.
Some 950 miles east of Moscow. Former Atlanta Thrashers goalie Michael Garnett currently plays for Traktor Chelyabinsk of the KHL.
What was that, where?
Traktor Chelyabinsk.
Sounds like something you ordered for dinner last night, Drew.
Anyways, Traktor Chelyabinsk of the KHL, near where the explosion occurred, and was awoken by the sound of the meteor exploding. My whole apartment was just bombarded, Garnett told Chris Kitching of CP24.com. It was so loud, it was this huge bang. I jumped out of bed and I was terrified. Put yourself into Garnett's shoes for a moment and imagine you were awoken by a loud bang of that nature. How many guesses as to what happened would it take you before you arrived at the answer of meteor exploding nearby?
I would guess it would be my head exploding after having to listen to that question.
Oh, I have no idea. It was a scary thing, though, to hear that a meteor had hit Russia. I definitely don't want a meteor to hit River Heights. So, I mean, it's scary. I mean, I would have to say you would think of probably 100 different things that could possibly be happening before you think it's a meteor. But it's funny. The only time you hear about a meteor is in a sarcastic sense. But it's scary, and I'm just glad that it didn't hit my newly purchased home.
I'm trying to figure out what sarcastic meteors you're hearing about.
I'm just surprised it wasn't you passing out.
Well, I mean, like, you know, if something... I'm not funny.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start with Ezra Ginsberg for Cheers and Jeers.
I'm going to cheer the meteor. No, I'm just kidding.
cheering the meat eater pizza at Boston Pizza, I think, is more likely.
As I'm about to, you know, think of my cheer, I'll expect you guys to jeer it as soon as it comes out of my mouth.
Devils or Jets? Let's just get it over
with. I'm going to cheer the puck handling ability of Marty Brodeur.
What?
It never ceases to amaze me. At 40 years old, yesterday he passed the puck down to Ilya Kovalchuk, who got the puck to Alexei Ponikar. Yeah, I like that, Reem. He'll not only go down as one of the best goalies of all time, he'll go down as puck handling. And I know the best puck handling goaltender. You don't see it from any other goalies, very few goalies. And, you know, it's still a treat for me to watch. I don't care if you guys make fun of me for it. It's still, for me, he did it twice yesterday, and there was another long pass in the game, and I love watching it. I'll watch it for hours on end.
Those lines were too easy, but we can't say it.
Yeah. Richard, would you like to continue on with cheers and jeers?
Yes, I'd like to jeer Rhett Warner, who decided to become more relevant as a commentator with inane ramblings than he was as a fifth or sixth defenseman for the Florida Panthers, Buffalo Sabres, Calgary Flames, wherever the heck else he played.
He fired Iggy up.
He called out Jerome McGinley and called out Ryan Smith, and I mean, I think what most importantly, kind of called into question their work ethic and their ability, and I don't think that's accurate at all. I think those guys both have a lot of pride, a lot of honor, and he should be taking a look in the mirror and reevaluating what he said about two of the classiest players, classiest Canadian players to ever wear Team Canada's jersey, never played in Calgary and Edmonton.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering the Minnesota high school goaltender. If you're going to go out in a blaze of glory, you might as well go out in this blaze of glory. Remus can tweet it out on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve. He was playing for his Minnesota high school team. It was his last game. He had been in a dispute with the coaches all year long around playing time. So rather than finishing respectfully, he took the puck, and he's a goalie, keep in mind, in a one-goal game, shot it into his own net, and then flipped the coaches the bird and skated off the ice. If you're going to go out in a manner like that, you might as well go out guns a-blazing, and he managed to do that. It's one of the funniest, if not most bizarre, videos you're ever going to see, so we'll tweet it out on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. That's it for this Saturday afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, the Linden Market Dental Center, Elite Sports Injury Clinic, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. Big thank you to our guests, Jack Edwards of the New England Sports Network, and Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, and Dr. Les Rikus. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Wednesday night, 6 p.m., NHL midweek, here on TSN 1290. Next Saturday, 6 a.m., special start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.